I appreciate following up on Dr. Cox Foster's presentation, because I do think that we need to be advocates for some areas that we haven't been advocates for in the past. And I'll deal with some of that during my talk as well. Insect contributions to ecosystem processes and global change. Insects can affect ecosystem processes dramatically, as most of us know, but not all of those effects are as obvious as a region-wide outbreak of bark beetles, for instance, that can open up large areas of canopy. Insects can reduce food supplies, affect human health in ways that are obvious and direct. But they have many other effects that are much more subtle, but may have dramatic implications for the long-term sustainability of resource production and even for global habitat. Some of the ways that I'll talk about that insects affect ecosystem and global conditions include primary production, vegetation structure, soil structure, water and nutrient fluxes, disturbance dynamics, and climate. Primary production and vegetation structure have been the emphasis of traditional entomology. We all know how insects reduce primary productivity and alter vegetation structure. These other effects on ecosystem conditions have largely been outside the realm of traditional entomology. They've been the realm of ecosystem ecology, and most of the people who have studied these effects of insects have cared little for the identity of the insect. And yet we know, because of the diversity of insects out there, that species that occur at different times of the year, feed on different parts of a plant, could dramatically alter the way in which nutrient fluxes occur, for instance, or the timing of nutrient fluxes. So I think it's very important that entomologists become involved in looking at the effects of insects on ecosystem conditions, because we're the ones who can discriminate. We can tell which insects may be doing affecting conditions in which ways. And I think that's an important step to take for those of you who may be planning future careers. Until recently, people generally thought that, entomologists even, generally thought that insects were always destructive when they feed on plants. We're accumulating evidence from a variety of long-term studies, including several forest defoliators, grassland defoliators, and even some agricultural insects, that plants may compensate for feeding by insects over longer periods of time. In fact, as shown in this example, we only see the expected reduction in incremental growth of trees during a 2 to 3 period of defoliation. Over the next 10 to 20 years, we may actually recover incremental growth of wood to what we would have expected in the absence of the insect. So if we're not planning to cut or harvest a resource for 10 or 20 years, it may actually be counterproductive to try to control it. The plants may recover, and that may is an important caveat. Here's an example of the effect of insects on vegetation dynamics, vegetation structure. This is a Douglas fir tussock moth outbreak in Sequoia National Park during the early 2000s. The brown trees in this slide are all white firs. White firs are basically an invasive species in this context. Although they're native in these forests, historically, white fir accounted for about 25% of the trees in these forests. The other 75% were accounted in roughly equal proportions by Jeffrey pine, sugar pine, and incense cedar. You can see a grove of sequoias over here in the slide as well. So this is a forest that historically was structured by fire, kept the forest relatively open. The few large white firs that occurred in these forests were kept in balance by periodic fire that limited the number of seedlings of this fire-intolerant, drought-intolerant tree species to low levels. However, with the advent of fire suppression at the turn of the 1900s, white fir just went gangbusters in these forests. And this is largely the problem we have now with both insects and fire in our western forests. You can see this out if you go look around Lake Tahoe or any of the forests in this area, prime examples. Forests that have become very dense, very water stressed, and of course if you drop a match in there, you've got fire ladders everywhere and you're going to have a catastrophic fire instead of the low ground fires that would have prevailed historically. So what have insects done in this forest? They've changed the vegetation structure. They've essentially altered it back to within the range of historic conditions, and I'll get back to that near the end. They can affect soil fertility, soil structure in a variety of ways. This is an example from Formica ant nests in a bog situation. And as you can see, the background concentrations, if I can find the cursor, background concentrations in blue in the soil between ant mounds, whoops. The hummocks on which the ant nests occur. You know, finding the cursor is harder than it seems it should be. Okay, the hummocks have an intermediate level of all these nutrients, magnesium, phosphate, potassium, sodium, and nitrogen and phosphorus, which are not pictured here. But the ant nests themselves are the highest in concentration of these various nutrients. So they represent hot spots in ecosystems for various nutrients, which can dramatically affect places where seeds may germinate and grow. Ant nests and termite nests also can crust over because of the way ants and termites structure their nests, and can affect the infiltration of water in the nest, around the nest, and away from the nest, affecting hydrology of ecosystems. Of course, herbivores can affect the movement of plant material, both in terms of foliage fragments or plant fragments, but also affect the nutrients that move both within those fragments and in other ways, as insect tissues, feces, and other ways. One example, and there are an accumulating number of examples now that look at the effects of various herbivores on nutrient cycling processes, that all show that herbivores substantially increase the flux of nutrients from plant to soil, influencing the resources available on the forest floor and so on. Now, in many cases where water or nutrient limitation is the trigger for outbreaks, the fact that insects are cycling nutrients to the soil, increasing the amount of water that can get to the soil, may actually mitigate the conditions that lead to the outbreak, making them self-limiting. Even the soil detritivores, soil arthropods and other organisms in the soil, can contribute to plant growth. This is something that helps close the cycle now in terms of how insects are affecting nutrient fluxes and systems. They transfer nutrients from plants to the soil. They can also help transfer nutrients from the soil back into plants. In this experiment, potted plants were, the soil was defaunated, that's the control, or the soil fauna were added back in, that's the F. And after 10 weeks, or whatever it is here, I can't remember, the faunated soil showed significantly greater plant growth as a result of greater nutrient mobilization from litter material in the soil. And this continued through the study. And it was also evident in the roots. And again, there are a growing number of studies that demonstrate that what's going on in the soil is instrumental in making nutrients available for plant uptake. Insects can be very important in the dynamics of disturbances in ecosystems, perhaps most dramatically in forests, where insect feeding on plant roots can increase plant tree vulnerability to wind throw, and of course the mortality and dead fuel material left on the forest floor can increase the likelihood of fire. Now, in natural systems, that may be frequently burned, this litter material would burn frequently. It would not build up to the point of becoming a catastrophic fire. And in many of these forest systems, the trees are actually adapted to periodic burning. And if they're not burned, too much fuel accumulates, and then you have more serious problems that can become catastrophic fires. Okay, and then at a global scale, scaling up from plant to ecosystem to even global scale, there have been estimates that termites can significantly affect the fluxes of carbon dioxide and methane. in the top figure here, these are isoclines of methane flux from termite colonies globally. The global flux calculated from these estimates amounts to about 5% of the total global methane flux. The bottom figure, based on these isoclines of carbon dioxide flux from termite nests, the estimate globally is that termites account for about 2% of the carbon flux globally. Although that's non-human fluxes, I should specify. Although these may not seem significant, if you consider that those are fluxes based on non-human totals, non-human cause totals, the insect sources may have been significant prior to combustion by humans and the greatly accelerated fluxes of carbon dioxide and methane. Insects can affect climate more directly through changes in canopy coverage. We've done a number of studies that have looked at the effects of clear cutting and other canopy opening disturbances. Unfortunately, none directly with insect defoliation. But we do know from comparison of areas where forests or grasslands have been cleared that you see a number of changes in local and regional climate. Plant canopies, obviously forests can have the most dramatic effects on temperature reduction, interception of precipitation, interception of wind, and so on. But even grasslands can have considerable influence in buffering the soil surface from heat, from solar heating, rainfall impact and erosion, and wind. Extrapolation to the effects of insects opening a canopy, we would expect that many of the same changes in local and regional climates could occur as a result of canopy opening by insects, but we desperately need the kind of studies to confirm or deny that. About 30 years ago, an entomologist, a very eminent entomologist, Bill Mattson, who many of you probably know, published a classic paper with a colleague, Andy Yaddy, who's a statistician, "Can Insects Stabilize Primary Productivity?" And started a change in entomological perspectives on how insects interact in ecosystems. One of the premises of that paper was that insects potentially regulate, stabilize primary productivity, and in doing so are capable of stabilizing ecosystem conditions in a way that may improve sustainability of many of our ecosystem products and services. So I'm going to run through now a little bit of the argument for that. And again, this is an area that I think bears considerable investigation, because insecticide applications may be counterproductive in cases where native insects in native ecosystems are performing vital functions. We know from a variety of studies, as I indicated earlier, that plants can compensate for low levels of herbivory. In fact, there's such widespread evidence now from, again, forest, grassland, and even crop agroecosystems that low levels of herbivory by insects can increase or stimulate primary productivity. This is pretty well established. We all know that at very high levels of herbivory, insects that totally defoliate plants or kill plants, that's not a good thing for the plants. But at some intermediate level of insect herbivory, plant productivity is maximized. Below that, insect herbivory is probably stimulating plant production. Above that, insect feeding is reducing plant production. That coupled with, if we look at the effects of that on a ecosystem scale, if the intensity of feeding is leading to increases in primary productivity at low levels, leading to reduced primary productivity at high levels when plants may be stressed or overabundant, we could imagine that productivity would be stabilized at some intermediate level. Again, just one example of how this may be occurring in the area that you can see around Reno here. Historically, the pine forests of this area looked like this, fairly widely spaced pines. Depending on elevation, they were probably Jeffrey or Ponderosa pines, some firs, other species mixed in. But this very sparse understory ground cover of various small shrubs, grasses, and so on, that would burn periodically and remain at very low, very short stature. Fire, you know, started in this system by lightning or whatever, would not have burned high into the tree. There's no fire ladder to get fire into the canopy under these conditions. However, as a result of human management and the ingress of true firs and other fire and water in drought intolerant tree species, this is what many of these forests look like. And again, driving around the area, you can see this at least as often as you can see more open pine forests that have been restored to more historic conditions. So again, if we look at what the effects of insects are in these systems, they're usually highly selective. They're targeting the most stressed plants, the densest plants. They're taking out the plants that were not there historically or not sustainable there under prevailing environmental conditions. And we might argue that the insects, in fact, are stabilizing this ecosystem. They're maintaining it within its range of historic variability rather than allowing this anthropogenic change to run uncontrolled under conditions where these firs are dying as a result of water limitation anyway. Okay, in conclusion, insects affect a variety of ecosystem conditions, some directly, some more subtly, but many in ways that probably affect soil fertility, local and regional climate, and perhaps the sustainability of food and other ecosystem services on which we depend. Insect outbreaks can alleviate stressful conditions that may have triggered the outbreak, and that's something that we do need to look a lot more at in various ecosystems. But as a result of that, we might look at insects in some contexts as stabilizing ecosystem conditions, and that's something that we would probably want to be able to determine for policy decisions. And again, I just make the argument that this is an area that entomologists need to be more active in. We're the ones who understand how the diversity of various communities may be affecting these processes in different ways. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. We do have time for questions if you'd like to ask.
Well, that was very clear.
Well, those of you who follow the game known as football might question the wisdom of putting somebody from LSU like Tim on the same program as somebody from OSU like me, given the recent unfortunate events on the gridiron that took place earlier this year. But I want to assure you that Tim has been nothing but a perfect gentleman, with one exception, and that is that he gave me the hardest job, which is to wrap this thing up, tie it all together, and make it make sense. So here's my best shot. We heard early on about the historical aspects of insects and entomology. Jim Harper told us about five insects and their impact on history, but surely he could have told us about 50 insects and their impact on history, or 100. Clearly, insects and people have been engaged in this little dance for as long as we've known. There have been some high moments, some low moments, but entomologists have been there on the front lines of everything. Likewise, when I talked, I told you a little bit about a single insecticide, DDT, which in itself had the power to change history and our understanding of ecosystem dynamics and the importance of using pesticides in a way that preserves the ecological integrity of our systems. We learned about some invasive species warnings, the economic and ecological impact of those invasive species, some insects, some not. Things like yellow jackets and ants in Hawaii, who knew how devastating they could be? And even as this damage and destruction is playing out, there's evolutionary novelty that we can learn from and incorporate into our body of knowledge. We then learned about genetically engineered BT crops. a really great story, because now we're modifying the genome itself to make it insecticidal. And as we're doing that, we're paying attention this time to things like resistance. We're figuring out how to manage it or prevent it as we go along. And really, I think that signals a change in the cultural zeitgeist that entomologists can claim credit for. Then we get to colony collapse disease, a major ongoing problem. And Diana Cox Foster gave us a call to action, which I'm sure we will all heed. But what a great story. Here we have a question that is, in essence, a forensic question. And in telling the story, Diana reacquainted us with the scientific method in so doing. So how do you assess all of the possible causes and then parse out the ones that are really causing the main event? And finally, we get to Dr. Showalter and a lovely recapitulation of all of the different points of impact that entomologists have had and will have as we go along. We cannot be content with just understanding small parts of the equation. We have to be able to address all of the events that are happening from the cell to the ecosystem and now even the planetary level in order to make sense out of what's going on. So entomology is key to all of this, and I think if you were to say the word entomology to members of the general public, you'd get a glazed over look, and somebody would finally go, oh yeah, you guys study word root origins or something like that, right? And if people do have a conception of entomologists as people who study insects, the picture that they conjure up in their mind is some old guy sitting in the back of a museum sticking bugs with pins and putting them in Cornell drawers. But the truth is that if you are to walk into the hallways of any entomology department in the nation, what you would hear as you walk down those hallways is discussions of proteomics and genomics and metabolomics and biorobotics and the neurobiology of learning. Entomology is all of these things. It is intimately involved with all of the major questions. We just recently did a new strategic plan, as I am sure many of you are doing, in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Studies at OSU. And it turns out that there's a widespread awareness that we need to be looking at the big picture items. We need to be talking about food and food security. We need to be looking for green solutions to a variety of different kinds of problems. We're all involved in bioenergy, in sustainable production, and environmentally sound solutions. So in some respects, our disciplinary label entomology is a little restrictive, but I think if you understand how entomologists are evolving and meeting the challenges of our society, that you will find that entomology is and always has been inherently interdisciplinary and therefore able and willing to respond in a multifaceted way to the most important problems of the day. We're going strong. We are a problem-solving discipline. We have a rich repertoire of skills, and I think we have a bright future. Thanks so much.